Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. I'm your reader, Denise. On the front page, payday for teacher as students watch eclipse. Thousands turn out at UI Pentecost to watch the partial solar eclipse by Grace King and Vanessa Miller, the Gazette. It was a payday for Taft Middle School science teacher Steve Kopke as he watched his students' excitement while they observed the moon pass over the sun Monday during the solar eclipse. You say something's going to happen and you can explain it, but it's nothing like experience it, Kopke said. It's an event they really will get once in their lifetime. While it happens often, it doesn't happen often where you are on the Earth. As the sky became hazy Monday a little after 2 p.m. and the air cooled, more than 500 students at Taft Middle School made their way outside, eclipse glasses in hand, to view the partial eclipse that passed over Iowa. A total solar eclipse made its way across parts of the United States, but in Iowa it was a partial eclipse with the moon covering about 83% of the sun. At the urging of science teachers, the school purchased 700 eclipse glasses for all 570 students and about 100 staff to view the rare phenomenon. Some students spread blankets on the school lawn. Emily Morris, 13, an eighth grader at Taft, said it was pretty cool. She didn't expect to see so much of the sun covered by the moon. Taft principal Gary Hartfield said he recalls watching an eclipse in 1979 with his elementary school class in Cedar Rapids. I remember it to this day. It made an impact on me back then. Hopefully these kids have that same type of memory, he said. On Friday, science teacher Jill Anderson gave a lesson about solar eclipses to her seventh grade class, stressing the importance of wearing the eclipse glasses and to not take pictures of the eclipse with their cell phones because it can damage the phone's sensor. This is not a day to worry about your fashion sense. This is a day to protect your eyes, Anderson said. Anderson recalled the last time she got to see a partial eclipse in 1996 when she was a student at Jefferson High School. She made an eclipse viewer with a cereal box, cardboard, foil, paper, scissors, tape, and glue. The do-it-yourself eclipse viewer, held with a pinhole facing the sun, protects the eyes by allowing the person to see a shadow of the eclipse. To teach about the eclipse when students can see it occurring in real time takes learning out of the classroom and brings it to life, Anderson said. During the last partial eclipse to cross over Iowa on August 21, 2017, students were still out of school for the summer. Keelan Jordan, 12, a seventh grader at Taft, recalled viewing the eclipse in 2017 when he was 5 years old. He also made an eclipse viewer out of a cereal box with his mom. It's cool, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, Jordan said. Anderson said, while Iowa will see other partial eclipses, being in the 85% partial eclipse range won't happen for another 375 years. I'm supposed to be in class. Not that the University of Iowa students needed much prodding to skip class or pause their studies to step outside on one of the first warmish school days of the semester, but the thousands who crowded the Pentecost for Monday's solar eclipse still was impressive. Necks craned with paper-constructed viewing glasses perched precariously on the bridge of their noses, backpack-laden gazers refused to take their eyes off the evolving celestial event, even if it meant minor collisions and slight stumbles on and off the paved walkways around the old Capitol. I'm supposed to be in class, UI sophomore Mia Hassan, 20, said with a slight shrug, although I did see my teacher outside, too. Hassan's friend, UI sophomore Clary Malloy, 20, said her rhetoric class took a field trip to experience what was billed as a majority solar eclipse from their vantage point on the UI campus, with the moon eclipsing about 89% of the sun at its peak just after 2 p.m. That was more impressive than the last eclipse watching opportunity in 2017 when clouds blocked much of the view in Iowa City. I had a free absence, Hassan said, so I was like, I'm going to take it while I can because I didn't see the last one. The UI campus viewing party was far from students only. Faculty and staff emerged from offices, toddlers tagged along behind parents, and retired Iowa Cityans unfolded lawn chairs, spreading information they'd gleaned about when peak moon coverage will occur. So when right at 2:01 p.m. the crowd burst into applause, 69-year-old Joe Arts was tickled. We commented here about the round of applause that went up, and it was awesome, he said. Among the most popular attractions at the Pentacrest viewing, aside from the sun and its concealing moon, was UI physics and astronomy professor Greg Howes, who brought his refractor telescope, allowing those on hand to sneak an up-close peek at the celestial anomaly. "Look at this," Howes said, pointing not at the sky, but at those gathering around him. "I can't be more delighted. Thousands of people out here." Iowa women's basketball teams run shows Power of Believing. It can take you a long way, like successive trips to national championships, by John Stepp, The Gazette, Cleveland. Caitlin Clark believed. Lisa Bluder believed. "We were probably about the only two that believed we could be at a Final Four," Clark said, looking back at her recruiting process. But when she stepped foot on campus, that belief became contagious as the star guard learned how much better you can make people by just believing in them and telling that to them, to their face. "Caitlin got them to believe," Iowa associate head coach Jan Jansen said. "Iowa even had its own believe sign from the hit Apple TV show Ted Lasso, a sign that actor Jason Sudeikis climbed on a ladder to autograph when he visited the team in December in Iowa City. Iowa's steadfast belief led unprecedented results as the Hawkeyes went to back-to-back national championship games, something never done before by any Big Ten team, let alone at Iowa. The Hawkeyes lost Sunday to South Carolina 87-75 in the national championship game. Iowa Hawkeye guard Caitlin Clark, 22, and Iowa Hawkeye forward Hannah Stolke, 45, laughed together Friday during the news conference after defeating UConn in an NCAA Final Four game at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse in Cleveland. The Hawkeyes ultimately lost Sunday to South Carolina in the national championship game. And they're showing a picture of Hannah Stolke and Caitlin Clark. Looking ahead, the power of belief is one of the things Clark, guard Gabby Marshall, their teammates, and the scores of Iowa fans will carry with them following the Hawkeyes' run of success that captivated much of the country. "The belief in yourself, belief in each other, that can take you a long way," Marshall said at her locker minutes after the fifth-year senior's final game in an Iowa uniform. "That belief," fellow senior Kate Martin said, "starts with preparation. We believe in each other because we've seen that every day in practice," Martin said. "It doesn't just happen out on the court. There's a lot of preparation that goes into it, so that gives you confidence, and confidence gives you belief." Marshall also will take away the part of head coach Bluder's culture that everyone mattered, no matter your role on the team. That was evident at the Final Four when the team went out of its way at the end of the open practice to personally thank Iowa's band and cheer and dance teams. "No matter what you do after college is over, whether you go on and keep playing or you start your career, it should be about the team," Marshall said. "It's always about the team." Bluder was huge on that. Iowa's circle during practices and shoot-arounds has always been a visual metaphor of what element of a Hawkeye culture is. Each person has a part in the circle, which forms at midcourt. The closeness of the circle resembles the closeness of the team. "It's a group effort," forward Sharon Goodman said. "That's the point of our circle, is that it's not just one person." Goodman also will carry with her another Bluterism after college to be where your feet are. "Wherever you're at in the moment, be there and be present," Goodman said. "If you're in class, be in class. Don't be on your phone. If you're in practice, don't be thinking about class. If you're on the floor, that's where you're at." Goodman said Bluder kind of became a mom in this place for me. Martin praised the great coaches who have empowered me to be a strong female leader. "That goes way beyond basketball," Martin said. That has been especially valuable to Martin, who plans to pursue coaching. "I hope to be half as good as a coach as she is one day," Martin said. "I'll take a lot of the values and principles that she's instilled in us, and I'll carry those into my own team." It may look a little different stylistically when Martin does it, considering Martin thinks, "I have a shorter temper than Bluder does." "I'll sure have my own Kate-isms at times," Martin said. "Bluder," Martin said, "is a genius when it comes to strategy and gameplay. But more than anything, I think it's just the consistency in who she is that helps us be as good as we can be, Martin said. As much as the coaching staff has been beneficial for the senior class at Iowa and beyond, the seniors have left a profound impact on the coaching staff. The example of hard work and belief and the magic that the seniors set, Jensen said, is a gift for a coach. Jensen will miss seeing Clark be goofy as heck and shoot it from Elliott Drive, the street outside Hawkeye Carver Arena. She'll miss seeing Kate Martin be Kate Martin every day. She'll miss Marshall coming in calm and cool and stealthy on a D. Goodman is as good as a human being as I've ever been around, Jensen said. That's not to mention guard Molly Davis, who sacrifices going to a place to start to come here and back up Caitlin, mostly last year. They will leave here knowing the impact they've made was far greater than any banner that can hang, Jensen said. And lastly, on the front page, jury convicts Cedar Rapids man of fatally stabbing Walker. Prosecutors say Teslick provoked her by repeatedly calling her a racial slur, by Trish Mahaffey, the Gazette, Cedar Rapids. A jury Monday convicted a Cedar Rapids man who prosecutors say provoked a black woman during a 2023 argument by calling her a racial slur before she ran at him and punched him in the face, and he responded by stabbing her to death with a kitchen knife. A Linn County jury deliberated about 8 hours between last Friday and Monday, finding Shane Teslick, 38, guilty of voluntary manslaughter and disorderly conduct. Epithets, threatening gestures, a simple misdemeanor in the fatal stabbing of Devonna Walker, 29, on January 2, 2023. The trial started March 26. At sentencing, Teslick faces 10 years in prison. He also will be required to pay $150,000 in restitution to Walker's estate or heirs, according to Iowa law. He had no visible reaction when 6th Judicial District Judge Jason Bessler read the verdicts and asked each juror to affirm their decision as requested by the defense. Teslick, who was free on bail pending his trial, was handcuffed and taken into custody. Voluntary manslaughter is a forcible felony, so he will remain in jail without bond or without bail for sentencing, which is set for June 7th. First Assistant Linn County Attorney Monica Slaughter said her office wanted to thank the Cedar Rapids Police Department for its tireless efforts in investigating the case and the many witnesses who came forward, cooperated, and testified. But most importantly, we would like to thank the jury for their service and their dedication to justice, Slaughter told the Gazette. The jury sent a very clear message in this case. Spewing a racial slur at Devonna and then killing her when she responded to that provocation is against the law. The amount of force Shane Teslick used was a disproportionate response to a threat she posed, and his actions were not justified, Slaughter said. The use of the N-word is dehumanizing and derogatory and, unfortunately, a part of our shared history. And history is exactly where that word should be left. We hope this verdict brings solace to Devonna's family and the community who mourns her. The Walker family, in a statement, thanked the community for the unwavering support during this incredibly difficult time. Your kindness and compassion have been a source of strength for our family as we navigate through the loss of Devonna, the family statement said. Your presence and support mean more to us than words can express. We are grateful for each and every one of you. Activists initially had protested regularly after Walker's death, asking for an arrest to be made, and later held a town hall event at the Cedar Rapids Library to discuss how black people are treated in the justice system. In response, Linn County Attorney Nick Maybanks issued his own public statement saying, "There is no place for the use of this disgusting language in a civilized society. The careful consideration that we have been giving to this case should not be construed in any manner to be an expression of ambivalence to the hurt that so many people feel from watching and listening to this language. It is on the top of our minds." At the trial, Teslick testified last week that he was protecting himself and his home when Walker charged at him and his girlfriend, who was in between the two, and was knocked over and assaulted as Walker made her way to Teslick. According to video evidence and testimony, as an argument escalated between Walker and Teslick's girlfriend, he got involved and threatened to kill Walker. He called her the racial slur just before she assaulted him as he stood in the doorway of his girlfriend's apartment at 2135 North Town Court Northeast in Cedar Rapids. Teslick and Walker, according to testimony and videos, had previous arguments mostly over Teslick's bulldog, which Walker, in the videos, said was aggressive. Teslick, during his testimony, said he initially didn't tell a police investigator he hurled a racial epithet at Walker before she assaulted him. He told a prosecutor under cross-examination on the stand that he didn't think it was important. Teslick said he used the slur to make her go away or neutralize the situation. He denied using the epithet more than once that night, but Slaughter played a video of the incident that circulated on social media and noted he said the slur four times. The last time he yelled at Walker had started walking away from his apartment, but then ran at him and assaulted him. A deputy state medical examiner testified during trial that the knife Teslick used to stab Walker penetrated her left lung and aorta, which resulted in her bleeding to death. The depth of the horizontal stab wound was 9 centimeters, about 3.5 inches, and the injury went from left to right and front to back, Dr. Jonathan Thompson, a forensic pathologist, testified. The wound, he said, was one of the deeper ones I've seen. Thompson said the toxicology report, as part of the autopsy report, showed Walker had alcohol, methamphetamine, cocaine, and marijuana in her system. He couldn't say to what degree she was under the influence of drugs because some drugs can stay in the system longer than others, and it depends on if the person has built up a tolerance. Thompson, however, said those substances didn't contribute to her death. In Iowa Today, esports facility to be built in Coralville. City gives developer a 15-year, 100% tax abatement. By Alejandro Rojas, The Gazette, Coralville. A company based in Burlington, Iowa, is planning to build an esports facility in Coralville. The city entered the development agreement this month with Lucky Pete, LLC, to build the facility on property west of the Lowe's, 2701 2nd Street, and north of Highway 6. The Coralville City Council agreed to provide the company with a 15-year, 100% tax abatement. Esports are video games where teams or individuals compete against each other. The competitions are growing in popularity and attract thousands of spectators abroad. The initial plan for the Coralville facility is to make it flexible, with an auditorium where spectators can watch esport competitions and also be a place where people can play video games for fun, Coralville City Administrator Kelly Hayworth said. It's really flexible the way they're trying to design it, and it would give people an opportunity to experience something that they presently don't have, Hayworth said. Justin Myers, owner of Myers Construction, the contractor for the project, said neither he nor the developer is ready to release information such as square footage, cost, or completion date, since they're still working through the details. Providing a 100% tax abatement to a project isn't something the city does often, Hayworth said. The Coralville City Council okayed this one because the facility is unique and the developer is taking a risk. The Eastport facility is part of the city's Highway 6 revitalization plan, which involves building on 2 plots of land near Lowe's. The plots are owned by Colony Real Estate of Waverly and are valued together at $194,800. The land has been unused for more than 20 years, and Coralville will extend city utilities to the area. During a council meeting last Tuesday, City Attorney Kevin Olson said the rest of the property would be subdivided and commercial taxes would be paid by any business locating there. Coralville Mayor Megan Foster, during a February 27th council discussion, noted the growth in esports and that an esports facility would appeal to people of all ages. She said she isn't a big gamer, but that the facility would appeal to her children. The new facility also could attract tourism to the area and in general be another destination for families, said Luke Eustace, director of Iowa City Area Sports Commission. The venue, he said, could be huge for our community, bringing in a different demographic of people. Popularity. Hayworth said the project comes at a time when interest and engagement in esports is increasing, with more high schools and colleges creating programs and teams. Examples include West High School in Iowa City, which has a team and joined the Iowa High School Esports Association, according to a February 12th news release. The University of Iowa has an esport team and in September 2022 opened the video game room Hawkeye Sports Arcade in the Iowa Memorial Union basement for students to use. Marshalltown Community College and Iowa State University also have esports teams and rooms, and the community college offers a one-year esport degree. The Mid-America Energy Recplex in West Des Moines also has an esports center open to the public to visit and play. How esports work. Levi LaRue, Technology Director for the North Tama School District and Vice President of the Iowa High School Esports Association, said traditional sports and esports have similarities, but both involving two teams competing to win a game. Esports operate on seasons lasting 8 weeks with postseason games and finals, he said. The association, he said, kind of runs our season very similar to football, where it's one game per week on a certain day. If you're scheduled for Friday at 4 o'clock, you just contact the other coach, you get into a private lobby online, and you just play each other. The association runs 3 seasons per year, fall, winter, and spring, that each designate the game to be played. Schools currently are competing in the spring season, playing the games Mario Kart 8, League of Legends, and Valorant. Proficiency in esports, LaRue said, can lead to college scholarships. School esports teams usually play games online, traveling only if they are located near the other team. The teams do travel for postseason and final competitions held at the Orpheum Theater in Marshalltown. LaRue said competition in esports is increasing every year. The Iowa High School Esports Association was established in 2019 and started with a test season involving 5 or 6 schools. Today, around 115 schools of all sizes from across the state compete. LaRue said the organization is run by volunteers with high school teachers making up its board. We are teachers first, and the goal was to create a platform and environment for kids to be able to play esports and go from there, he said. Soft skills. Jill Hoffmeckel is a teacher, librarian, and one of the esports coaches at Iowa City West High School, overseeing 15 to 20 students on the esport team each season. Esports, she says, appeals to many students, especially some who may not be interested in or able to compete in a traditional sport. A lot of my players have maybe never even been a part of a traditional athletic team, she said. A lot of soft skills that they build through their participation in esports are so beneficial, and I would say mirror the skills that kids develop on a traditional athletic team. Parents are happy, too, to see their students involved in a group activity, she said. It's always very touching as a coach for parents to share that with me at the end of the season, Hoffmeckel said. Parents have shared with me at the end of the season that this activity was the thing that helps their kids feel connected to school. Regarding a possible esports facility in Coralville, LaRue and Hoffmeckel both said they are excited by the possibility of having a venue like that available, especially one with seating for spectators. I think teenagers and young people have so few places that they feel like they can just be themselves, Hoffmeckel said. I think providing a location like that, a facility like that for kids, is going to be a net positive for lots of different young people. Iowa to adopt rules on blocked abortion ban. State justices to hear argument Thursday on halted 2023 law by Tom Barton. Des Moines. Rules meant to carry out a blocked Iowa law banning abortions early in pregnancy will move forward while this week the Iowa Supreme Court will consider a legal challenge to the constitutionality of the state ban. The State Administrative Rule Committee met Monday to review rules adopted by the State Medicine Board that would apply to a new state law on abortion. Lawmakers raised concerns but did not object to the adopted rules, which will take effect April 24th. However, with the law temporarily blocked, the rules will not be enforced unless the court allows the law to go forward. The Iowa Supreme Court is set to hear oral arguments Thursday in Republican Governor Kim Reynolds' appeal of the lower court's decision that paused the crux of the restrictive abortion ban from taking effect. Lawmakers last year passed and Reynolds signed into law House File 732 during a rare special session. It would change the amount of time a pregnant person has to seek an abortion from 20 weeks post-fertilization to as little as 6 weeks before many know they're pregnant. What does the law do? The law bans abortion once cardiac activity is detected in an embryo or fetus, which can be as early as 6 weeks. It includes exceptions for rape, incest, and medical emergencies. A Polk County District Court judge temporarily blocked the law shortly after its passage last summer, but allowed the rulemaking the process to move forward. Physicians have raised concerns about the requirements placed on them, the use of non-medical terminology included in the law, and the impact on recruitment of OB-GYNs in the state. While the ban contains some exceptions for abortions, some Iowa physicians have warned the restrictions would hinder their ability to provide appropriate, timely care. What do rules say? Many requested that the Board of Medicine use language that parallels that used by physicians in their practice. While the board revised the rules to include terminology that doctors use, many terms included in the law are defined by state statute and cannot be altered. The law is crafted around the detection of a fetal heartbeat, which is not easily translated to medical science. While advanced technology can detect a flutter of cardiac activity as early as 6 weeks gestation, medical experts say the embryo at that point isn't yet a fetus and doesn't have a heart. The rules instruct physicians to make a bona fide effort to detect a fetal heartbeat by performing a transabdominal pelvic ultrasound. If cardiac activity is detected, defined in the law as the steady and repetitive rhythmic contraction of the fetal heart within the gestational sac, the abortion cannot be performed unless one of the exceptions has been met. The bill includes exceptions for pregnancies that are the result of rape in cases reported within 45 days and incest in cases reported within 140 days. It also includes exceptions for miscarriage, a fetal abnormality that would result in an infant's death, and for when the mother's life is threatened. To determine whether patients qualify for the ban's exceptions for rape and incest, physicians would be required to gather details from the pregnant person to determine when and whether a sex act occurred, including if and when the person was first reported to law enforcement, a health agency, or a family physician. When can doctors intervene to save a life? As for determining whether a fetus has an abnormality, that is, the physician's reasonable medical judgment is incompatible with life, doctors would be required to document tests and procedures performed and their results, along with a description as to why they support the diagnosis. The law also provides an exception for medical emergency, which includes pregnancy complications, endangering the life of pregnant person, and cases in which continuation of the pregnancy would create a serious risk of substantial and irreversible impairment of the majority body function of the pregnant woman. The board did not provide specific guidance for how badly a pregnant person's health would have to decline before doctors can intervene. Republican lawmakers and supporters of the law say the exceptions allow medical providers to exercise judgment and provide abortions when they believe one applies. Opponents contend the unnecessary uncertainty and worry among physicians of potentially losing their medical license could prompt providers to put off abortions if they're uncertain. What penalties do doctors face? The rules do not outline how the board would determine noncompliance or specific penalties physicians would face for violating the law. Rather, it would be up to the discretion of the board. Existing administrative rules lay out the extent of the punishment the Board of Medicine can impose on physicians and licensees who violate board rules and state laws. The board may revoke, suspend, or restrict someone's license, or place them on a probation period, or require additional education or training. The board also may impose a fine up to $10,000 and issue a citation and warning. Democracy. Law could threaten IVF in Iowa. Senator Cindy Winkler, a Democrat from Davenport, who serves on the legislator's Administrative Rules Review Committee, raised concerns with the definition of unborn child included in the rules. The law uses the term unborn child to refer to an embryo or fetus from the time of fertilization to birth. Winkler worried the definition would imperil access to in vitro fertilization in the wake of the Alabama Supreme Court ruling that frozen embryos are children and that those who destroy them can be held liable for wrongful death. I know that the intent of the law, but because so much of this bill did not really include medical terminology when it was passed, I think that it is unfortunate that we have these rules in place and will be in effect before the court case is determined, she said. Mazie Stillwell, Public Affairs Director of Planned Parenthood Advocates of Iowa, said the proposed rules will lead to chaos and confusion within the medical field and interfere with Iowa's access to safe and legal abortion. The way that the bill was written is not in line with medical practice, Stillwell said. AG, Iowa has interest in protecting unborn. Iowa Attorney General Brenna Byrd, a Republican, argues in court filings that Iowa has a vital interest in protecting unborn human life at all stages of development. The brief argues that abortion providers and clinics lack standing to sue on behalf of pregnant women, given that there is no constitutional right to provide abortions with the recent reversal of Iowa and the U.S. Supreme Court cases. No right is more valuable than the right to life, Byrd says in a statement last year defending the law. We know that every moment counts when it comes to protecting the unborn and are working diligently to ensure the heartbeat law is upheld. You are listening to reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Tuesday, April 9th, 2024, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Brianna Sauer, 39, of Mechanicsville, passed away peacefully in her home on April 6, 2024, after a courageous year-long battle with cancer. Celebration of Life, Saturday, April 13, 2024, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., Stuart Baxter Funeral and Memorial Services, Mount Vernon, Iowa. James B. Bell, Cedar Rapids. A celebration of life will be held on June 30th at Manhattan Pavilion in Cedar Rapids at noon. Robert J. Kucharski, Brookfield, Wisconsin. Robert J. Kucharski, 91, of Brookfield, Wisconsin, formerly of Cedar Rapids, passed away April 5th, 2024. A visitation will be held Friday, April 12th from 9 a.m. until the funeral mass, 10 a.m. at All Saints Catholic Church, Cedar Rapids. Interment will follow at Mount Calvary Cemetery. John David Tholen, 76, of Tifton, entered into eternity on Saturday, April 6, 2024. The visitation will be at Fry Funeral Home in Tipton from 4 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, April 11th, and Celebration of Life service at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Stanwood at 10 a.m. on Friday, April 12th. Graveside services will immediately follow at Red Oak Cemetery and a luncheon at St. Mary's Hall in Tipton to follow. Joan Hudson Detweiler Giel, Iowa City, 84, died on March 30, 2024 at the University of Iowa Healthcare Medical Center downtown with family by her side. A private ceremony will be held in Oakland Cemetery in Austin, Minnesota, where Jane will join her parents and brother in the Baird and Detweiler plot. Russell Edward Clute, 61, of Manchester, Iowa, passed away on Sunday, April 7, 2024, at Acura Healthcare of Marshalltown in Marshalltown. Funeral service, 11 a.m. Friday, April 12, 2024, Colesburg Community Church in Colesburg, Iowa, with Pastor Pete Bushman officiating. Visitation, 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday, April 11, 2024, at Leonard Muller Funeral Home in Manchester, Iowa. Friends may also call at the church on Friday, April 12, 2024, from 9 to 11 a.m. Internment, Zion Cemetery, Colesburg, Iowa. Doreen M. Schulbrock, 80, of Marion, passed away on Sunday, April 7, 2024. A memorial service will be held on Thursday, April 11, 2024, 2 p.m., at the Cedar Memorial Park Chapel of Memories. Interment will follow at the Cedar Memorial Park Cemetery. Dale H. Coppice, 95, of Stanwood, passed away at the Hallmark Care Center in Mount Vernon on Monday, April 8, 2024. Funeral services will be held on Friday, April 12th at 10:30 a.m. at the Stanwood Union Church, with Pastor Theodora Okine officiating. Visitation will be on Thursday, April 11th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Chapman Funeral Home in Clarence. Burial will be in the Stanwood Cemetery with military rites. On the Insight page, community letters. Pesticides, weed killer behind Iowa's rising cancer. Thanks to Aaron Jordan and Brittany Miller for their recent series on cancer in Iowa. I grew up in a farming community in Kent County, UK, and was used to crop rotation to care for the soil. When our family moved from England to Iowa in 1985 for my husband's job with Rockwell Collins, I asked why Americans didn't do crop rotation beyond corn and soybeans. I was told that farmers had invested in expensive machinery and could not change to a different crop, so chemicals were used to enrich the soil. I was shocked. In England, while working as an oncology nurse, I never saw a child with cancer. Now we have cancer hospitals for children. I've also worked as a holistic practitioner using reflexology, Reiki, and healing touch. One client had been a farmer with her husband. During the 80s crisis, they sold their farm to a corporation but stayed on the farm as managers. The corporation required them to use far more chemicals than they had ever used. Her husband became terminally ill with prostate cancer and died. A few years later, she developed ovarian cancer and died. Now I'm concerned for the employees of lawn care companies. Their employers claim their workers have protective clothing and boots, but research shows the harmful chemicals can penetrate the toughest boots and be absorbed into the feet of the worker. Dandelions won't kill you, but weed killer chemicals can. Patricia Behrens, Cedar Rapids. From Iowa Today, bottle bill changes leave fewer options. Iowa lawmaker says it may be time to consider repealing 5-cent deposit, by Aaron Murphy, Gazette, Des Moines Bureau. Two-year-old changes to Iowa's recycling law have resulted in fewer places for Iowans to return their recyclable bottles and cans to redemption, or to redeem the 5-cent per container deposit, a group of Iowa recyclers said Monday. A key state lawmaker said if the state recycling program struggles, the next legislative move may be to repeal the law. Under Iowa's recycling program, consumers pay a 5-cent deposit on most plastic and aluminum beer and soda containers. They can recoup that nickel by returning empty containers to redemption centers or retailers. The program was created to encourage Iowans to recycle their plastic and aluminum bottles and cans. States with deposit laws have a beverage recycling rate of about 60%, while states without deposits have a recycling rate of about 24%, according to the Container Recycling Institute. In 2022, the state repealed the requirement that grocery and convenience stores accept returned recyclables. That new law also increased the fee paid by beverage distributors to redemption centers, with the goal of incentivizing the expansion and creation of more redemption centers across the state. 2 years later, the number of state-licensed redemption centers has increased. There are 104 active state-licensed centers, according to the state, but not enough to offset the number of grocery and convenience stores that got out of the recycling business, according to members of the nonprofit advocacy group Cleaner Iowa, which includes recycling companies. The fee increase has led to more redemption centers opening across the state, but we need more, Mick Berry, a former president of Mid-America Recycling in Des Moines, said Monday at a news conference hosted by Cleaner Iowa at the Iowa Capitol. The unintended consequence of this bill, however, has been actually a net reduction in places to redeem your containers for consumers and citizens of the state, and thus creating a lack of convenient redemption as envisioned by Governor Robert Ray and Governor Terry Branstad when they created this law back in 1979, Berry said. Cleaner Iowa surveyed more than 1,000 Iowa businesses, mainly grocery and convenience stores, and found that only 8.7% of those businesses are redeeming recyclable containers. Furthermore, only 8 of the 143 businesses contacted that still are required to participate in the state recycling law are doing so, according to the group. The mass exodus of grocery and convenience stores from the program has created what the group is calling recycling deserts, where individuals must travel to the nearest recycling redemption center. There are 29 counties without a redemption center, according to the state figures analyzed by Cleaner Iowa. Representative Brian Lose, a Republican from Bond Rant, who was a key legislator in writing the 2022 changes into law, said if the state's recycling program struggles under the recent enacted changes, the next step may be to repeal the 5-cent deposit. If it doesn't work, I think the next step is to get rid of it. It's clearly not working across the state, Lose said. If it's not going to work, what's the next step? I think one of the options on the table has to just repeal it. We tried to fix it, and if it's not going to work, then that may be something we have to take a really hard look at. R.G. Schwarm, executive director of Cleaner Iowa and an Iowa Capitol lobbyist, noted the state recycling program's popularity. A 2022 poll conducted by Seltzer & Company for Cleaner Iowa showed 84% of Iowans said the recycling law is good for the state, and said Cleaner Iowa's survey was conducted with the hopes of providing an early snapshot of the impact of the 2022 changes to the law. As part of those changes, a legislative committee will review the program in 2025. The bottle bill works, but it's clear there are some areas that need attention, including enforcement issues, Schwarm said in a statement to the Gazette. We hope lawmakers will approach the 2025 Fiscal Review Committee with an open mind and with the objectives to make the bottle bill system that Iowans care about better and more convenient. Name released of man killed in Cedar Rapids police shooting by Emily Anderson, The Gazette, Cedar Rapids. David Vanderham, 39, of Cedar Rapids, was killed Saturday night in an officer-involved shooting, according to the Iowa Department of Public Safety. Vanderham called 911 at 6:37 p.m. Saturday, asking police to respond to his residence on 31st Street Northeast. A second man also called 911, asking police to perform a welfare check on Vanderham, according to a news release. Investigators said it was reported that Vanderham was making homicidal and suicidal remarks. Vanderham had a weapon and was with the other man when police approached. Officers told him to drop the weapon, authorities said, but he raised it in their direction. Three officers shot at him and he died on the scene. The other man, who was also hit by gunfire, was taken to the hospital with multiple gunshot wounds, the release states. The department's Division of Criminal Investigation, which is investigating the shooting, declined Monday to release the injured man's name. The names of the officers involved in the shooting will be released after the officers have been interviewed as they're part of the investigation. Man charged with sexually abusing Casey's co-workers by Emily Anderson, The Gazette. A Claremont man was arrested Friday on charges that he sexually abused multiple co-workers, including a minor, at a Casey's in Claremont. Terry Joseph Choi, 32, is charged with 5 counts of third-degree sexual abuse. The Fayette County Sheriff's Office began investigating him last Thursday when a 17-year-old who worked with Choi at Casey's reported that he had touched her inappropriately, according to criminal complaints. While investigating the 17-year-old's report, deputies were contacted by 2 other people who worked at Casey's, who both reported they had also been sexually abused by Choi. One of the victims had made a report with Casey's corporate, but nothing was done, complaints state. One of the victims told law enforcement that Choi would make inappropriate comments that eventually escalated to him grabbing her inappropriately. Twice he shut her in the cooler or freezer with him while she was stacking products and sexually abused her. She said she was afraid to report the abuse, according to complaints. Choi was arrested Friday and is being held on $50,000 bond, according to a news release. Sheriff Marty Fisher is concerned that there may be other victims. If anyone has any information or you feel you were a victim, please contact Fayette County Sheriff's Office, the release states. In sports, boys soccer, Prairie will sharpen skills with road tests. Hawks are playing 15 games away from home. By Ryan Plegenkuhl. Cedar Rapids. Cedar Rapids Prairie is putting the phrase defense travels to the test this year. The boys' soccer team, 3-0, will play 10 of its 15 regular season games on the road in 2024, and many of the opponents they'll face were ranked in 2023. This is the toughest schedule we've had in my tenure here, Coach Kurt Lewis said. We have to play at a level that we want to play, no matter who or where we are. The road-centric schedule is a strategy Lewis hopes pays dividends for the Hawks in the postseason. Prairie has reached at least the state quarterfinal round in three consecutive seasons. However, its lone state tournament win during that period was a quarterfinal victory over Johnston in 2022. One of the things we've stressed is that we've struggled with winning sub-state and then going to state, Lewis said. We think the sub-state atmosphere is good enough, but it's just a whole different thing in Des Moines. So now if we can get to Des Moines, can we then win the big quarterfinal game? Because it's kind of been the monkey on our back. One thing Lewis knows for sure, no matter the playing field or opponent, if his team plays strong defense, they'll have a shot. As long as you don't give up goals, you have a chance to win, Lewis said, and then you just got to find the one or two goals. Through three games, the Hawks have followed their philosophy to perfection, outscoring their opponents 150, including a 2-0 win against 2023 state semifinalist Ankeny Centennial. Our spine is goalkeeper Aiden Newman, Lewis said after Prairie pitched its third straight shutout in a 3-0 win over Cedar Rapids Jefferson on Thursday. It's an honor to be able to put a player like him back there. Newman earned second-team All-State honors last season and was the Mississippi Valley Mississippi Conference Goalkeeper of the Year. Preparation is a big thing, watching film and knowing your opponent, Newman said, but it really goes to my back four. They're great, and they have been there for the last few years, and that helps me a lot. Senior Reese Lurch is among the back four and is one of Prairie's key returning players. He, Lurch, does a very good job of keeping our back line together, senior Gavin Lewis said. Offensively, Gavin Lewis has taken more of the striker role this season. Lewis led the Hawks in goals in 2023 with 10. This year, he already has 5 goals and 4 assists. In the last 3 years, Gavin scored goals in the midfield for us, Kurt Lewis said. We moved him up top to get a little more offense for us this year. Drew DeSchmidt, Easton Mai, Owen Kaler, and Caleb Eckert also have scored goals this season. Gavin's going to draw a lot of attention, Kurt Lewis said. He knows it's important to get other guys going because if we're going to make a run, it's not going to be just him. The Hawks will need all hands on deck, and they'll play 7 of the last 9 games on the road. Notable opponents during that stretch include 2023 state qualifiers West Des Moines Valley Dowling, Waukee Northwest, Iowa City West, and Iowa City Liberty. Having all these road games, it'll be definitely prepare us for if we get past sub-state, Newman said. I think that's a huge thing because a lot of teams like to play at home. They like to have a crowd and that feel of energy. But when you're away, and you don't have that, so you have to learn to feed off each other, off the other things. I think we've got a team that can compete if we get to state, Kurt Lewis said. We've got a schedule that will prepare us to compete there. It's just a matter of, for that 80 minutes, are you better than me? In things to do today, Literary Book Lovers Book Club. This is a general interest book club that meets the second Tuesday of each month. Discuss Dying to Be Me by Anita Morjani, when 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Ladd Library, 3750 Williams Boulevard Southwest, Cedar Rapids. The cost is free. And also today, Hobby, Get Crafty, Trinket Trays. Tweens and teens will use their hands and basic sculpture tools to shape air dry or magic clay into cute and functional trinket trays. 4 to 5:30 p.m., Cedar Rapids Public Library, 450 5th Avenue Southeast, Cedar Rapids. Cost is free. In today's weather, mostly sunny, wind west 10 to 20 miles per hour. In Cedar Rapids, a high of 66, a low of 40. In Iowa City, a high of 67 and a low of 42. River levels in eastern Iowa, the Cedar River, Waterloo, 5.8 and rising. Cedar Rapids, 3.81 and falling. Conesville, 7.23 and falling. The Iowa River at Marshalltown, 10.67 and falling. Belle Plaine, 6.12 and falling. Marengo, 6.41, falling. Iowa City, 10.44, falling, Lone Tree 6.03 falling, Columbus Junction 11.13 falling, and the Wapello 13.22 and falling. And finally, in Iowa today, Senate House GOP split over changes to judicial selection. Gazette, Lee Des Moines Bureau. A proposal to give the Iowa governor more power over district judge appointments is not likely to find support in the Iowa House, said one key lawmaker overseeing the judicial budget process. A proposal in Senate Republicans' Judicial Systems Budget, Senate Study Bill 3203, would remove the most senior judge from each of the state's 14 district judicial nominating commissions. The judge would appoint an additional member, meaning the governor would appoint a majority of the 11 members on each commission. District judicial nominating commissions are 11-member boards in each of Iowa's 14 judicial districts that submit nominees to the governor to fill judicial vacancies. Currently, the commissions include 5 members appointed by the governor, 5 members elected by lawmakers or by lawyers in the district, and the longest-serving judge in the district, who also is the chair of the commission. Lawmakers made similar changes at the state level in 2019, allowing the governor to appoint a majority of the members on the commission selecting judges for the Iowa Supreme Court and the state appellate court. Republicans passed the bill Monday out of the Senate Appropriations Committee, making it eligible for floor vote. Democrats voted against it. But in the House, where lawmakers have yet to file a bill funding the judicial system, the proposal is a non-starter, said Representative Brian Lose, Republican Bon Durant, chair of the House's Justice Systems Appropriations Subcommittee. That should not be in that budget, and I'm not supportive of that, Lose said. I do not believe there's enough support for that in the House at all. Democrats opposed the plan in committee, saying it would tip the balance of the commissions to the executive branch and removes a judge's expertise. Senator Julian Garrett, Republican, Indianola, said he does not want to pass a budget bill without the policy changes. He said judges could exert influence over the commission because the other members are practicing lawyers in the judge's district. You may be hard-pressed to disagree with the judge when you're selecting new judge applicants for the governors to consider, he said. Senate advances film tax debate program. Lawmakers are one step closer to reviving a long-defunct program giving tax incentives to studios that produce films in Iowa. The legislation passed its first hurdle Monday in the Senate. A Senate subcommittee advanced House File 2662, which the House passed last month, moving it on to the full Appropriations Committee. Film studios would be able to claim up to 30% tax rebate for qualified expenses under the bill. It would create a $10 million pilot program for the first year and require more legislative action to make it permanent. A similar program existed from 2007 to 2009, but ended after it was found that millions of dollars in tax rebates were improperly issued. Lawmakers said this program would have better oversight. Local funding for religious charities. Counties and townships may devote money to religious organizations for public service under a bill signed into law by Governor Kim Reynolds. The law allows church-managed organizations to receive public money if it is for a project, according to the text, that benefits the public and does not require any religious or secular services, educational programs, or participation requirements. Supporters have said such services include food pantries, homeless shelters, and child care. The bill, House File 2264, received widespread support in the Iowa legislature, passing the House 94-2 and the Senate 38-10. Cracking down on teacher grooming. A bill that would require school districts to report to state officials if a licensed employee is disciplined for grooming or abusing a student is headed to Governor Kim Reynolds' desk. Current law requires that districts must report to the State Board of Education Examiners, the state's education licensing body, if a teacher or other license holder is disciplined for conduct that constitutes soliciting, encouraging, or consummating a sexual or inappropriate relation with a student. House File 2487 would add grooming behavior and abusing a student to the list of actions that must be reported to the board if an employee is disciplined. Grooming behavior is defined in the bill as any behavior which, in light of all relevant circumstances, is meant to entice or entrap a student or students with the intent to engage in a sex act. It defines inappropriate relationship as a sexual relationship or one in which sexual harassment or physical or sexual abuse occurs or is otherwise not in compliance with generally accepted educational practices. The House concurred with Senate amendment removing and replacing reference to a romantic relationship with a sexual relationship. If the Board of Education examiners has evidence that a school staff member committed a crime, the board would need to report it to authorities. It also removes a 3-year limitation on investigating a complaint if it falls under the grooming behavior definition. The amended bill Monday passed the House unanimously. It now heads to Reynolds. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for April 9th, 2024. I'm your reader, Denise. You can access a recording of today's reading on your website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening.